Hello everyone and welcome to Raya Affairs.
My name is Ksenia and I'll be your host for this episode. Raya is a youth-led international think tank that translates the abstract world of international affairs by simplifying rather than generalizing. Raya is a place where you come to learn about the stories and worries of political leaders, the behind the scenes of decision makers, and how politics impacts and changes your life. This is Raya Affairs, filling you wherever you are. As always, I would like to start with a disclaimer that expressed opinions in these episodes are welcome, even though they are not a direct reflection of Raya, as we specialize in unbiased writing. In today's episode, we will be talking about the current political crisis in France and the challenges President Emmanuel Macron is facing after the 2024 snap elections. Joining me today to discuss this topic is Elisa De Angelis, who recently wrote an article on it. Hello, Elisa, and thank you for joining me. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. Thank you very much, Ksenia, for having me today. I'm Elisa. I come from Rome, and I'm a second-year student of a master's in international security at Charles University in Prague.
Thank you very much for the introduction. Before we start to talk about today's topic, I'll ask you to answer our usual ice-breaking question. Could you tell us which leader, either dead or alive, who has impacted the world, would you want to have a conversation with, and why?
Wow, that's a really interesting question. So even though it's not very easy to pick up just one leader, I might go for Enrico Berlinguer. Berlinguer was an Italian politician who became one of the most influential and iconic characters in the so-called First Republic, which is the period between the 1946 and the 1994. He has always been a very active anti-fascist, which is something that really fascinated and inspired me. He joined the Communist Party in the 40s and later became its secretary. He was mainly focused on foreign affairs and played a major role in the international communist movement. He initiated a process to distance themselves from the Soviet Union and started proposing a new movement known as the Eurocommunism. Don't get me wrong with this. Of course, I don't want to say that I'm a fan of communism, but the way in which he was involved in politics and its genuine passion is really interesting in my opinion. He was a very popular leader, always respected by his adversaries and loved by his supporters. His popularity was shown especially in a video that was shot during his funeral in Rome, to which more than a million people showed up. I mean, can you even imagine that? It was the first time that so many people showed up for a political leader. I would love to ask him how this was possible. Like, how could he be so loved by his supporters and at the same time so much respected by his adversaries? How did he manage to achieve such balance? It would be very interesting for me to see whether he had any kind of strategy or whether he didn't really expect to gain so much consensus.
Wow, that is a very fulfilling and interesting answer. Thank you very much. Now, I would like to say that we can start our conversation about your article. And let's start with the bigger picture. You write that the 2024 snap elections were meant to reset the political playing field, but instead, they left France even more divided. What exactly went wrong with Macron's strategy and how did it backfire?
Yes, the 2024 snap elections were meant to reset the political playing field after Macron's party suffered a setback in the European elections. His goal was to reaffirm democratic legitimacy by letting the people decide, but as we saw, the results didn't go as planned. Instead of creating clarity, the elections produced a deeply fragmented national assembly with no party or bloc securing a clear majority. So I think the political crisis was already brewing in the background before 2024. It wasn't born out of the snap elections, but those elections definitely accelerated it. In my opinion, Macron was trying to prove a point. He made a big bet, maybe a bit too big, on the idea that a fresh vote would restore stability. Instead, what we saw was the opposite. So a fractured assembly, increased polarization, and even greater difficulty in creating a functioning government. In that sense, the snap elections ended up weakening Macron's position rather than strengthening it. So I would say that he kind of lost his bet.
Yeah, and the fallout from that miscalculation basically reshaped the political terrain, shifting the power balance in the National Assembly. Can you please walk us through what the new parliamentary landscape looks like and why it's made coalition building almost impossible?
Absolutely. So French politics might seem a bit messy, or at least that's how it used to be for me. So I'll try to make it as easy and understandable as possible. Basically, the 2024 snap elections reshaped the balance of power in the National Assembly, as you said. And we have now three major blocs. We have the left-wing New Popular Front, which is a broad alliance that was launched in summer 2024 to contest the snap elections and the gains of the far-right parties in the European elections. The New Popular Front is made up of several center-left and left-wing parties with the unifying motive of opposing the national rally. Then we have Macron centrist Renaissance Alliance and the far-right National Rally. So having said this, none of them holds a majority, and most importantly, their ideological differences are extremely sharp. Coalition building has become almost impossible because these blocs fundamentally disagree on the direction that France should take. The left is fragmented internally, especially between the more moderate socialists and the radical La France Insoumise. Macron's centrist bloc has been trying to reach out to the traditional right, but that's complicated by the presence of the far right, which many see as a red line that it's better not to cross. And at the same time, the far right has gained enough seats to exert real influence, but no one wants to formally partner with them, or at least not openly. So what we have now is a National Assembly where cooperation is blocked by ideological differences and political rivalry, and that's what makes forming a stable government such a challenge.
Yeah, and in the middle of that basically fragmented parliament, Macron's choice of prime minister was very crucial. And his choice to appoint Michel Barnier as a prime minister seemed like a more of a move to appease the right. But as you explain in your article, this only made things more complicated. Why do you think Barnier's government collapse was so quick?
Yeah, in my opinion, Macron's decision to appoint Michel Barnier was definitely a strategic move. He was trying to appeal to the right and even parts of the far right by choosing someone with conservative credentials, but also a strong European profile. Barnier was seen as a compromise figure, someone who could potentially bring together different factions on the right while maintaining a sense of, let's say, institutional credibility. But the problem was that Barnier's own party, Le Pen, only held 48 seats in the parliament, which was far from enough to build a stable majority. To govern effectively, he had to seek external support, which meant negotiating with the far right. And that move, understandably, alienated the moderates and the left. And it also backfired when the National Rally turned against him to block the 2025 budget. So Barnier found himself in a politically impossible position, trying to please everyone, but satisfying no one in the end. His government collapsed just after 3 months, and this is a clear sign that Macron's balancing act wasn't working.
Thank you very much for your answer. And from your article, we also know that one of the most dramatic moments came soon after that, with Bayrou invoking Article 89.3 to pass the budget. That's a very controversial constitutional tool. How has its use affected Macron's image and the public trust in democratic processes in France?
So the use of Article 49.3 by Bayrou to pass the 2025 budget was definitely a turning point, not just for his government, but for Macron's broader image. This article allows the executive to bypass a parliamentary vote unless a motion of no confidence is passed. And while it's technically legal, it is often seen as undemocratic, especially when repeatedly used. And Macron has relied on it quite heavily. For example, to pass the controversial pension reform in 2023, which already sparked massive protests across the country. So when Bayrou invoked this article again, it kind of reinforced the public perception that Macron's administration prefers executive shortcuts over parliamentary debate. Many saw it as another instance of power being concentrated at the top in a moment where citizens were already feeling frustrated by the lack of political representation.
In your article, you also explain how Macron has been shifting further to the right, and especially on a number of issues, for example, immigration. What do you think is driving that pivot, and how has it affected this his centrist and left-leaning support base?
Yes, Macron's rightward shift is quite strategic, but also very risky. What's driving it is mainly the political mass. So without a clear majority in the National Assembly, he needs support from the right and even parts of the far right to get things done. But this shift comes at a cost. While it might help him win over conservative lawmakers, it's deeply alienating to its original base, especially the left-leaning voters who supported him back in 2017 or 2022, because he promised progressive reforms. The New Popular Front has been especially vocal in criticizing these moves, especially on immigration, saying they go against France's values or of asylum and integration. So rather than uniting the country or the parliament, this strategy risks deepening the divide even more. In a way, Macron is caught between trying to secure enough votes to govern and maintaining his centrist identity, and it's not clear whether he can do both.
Perfect. Following on the issue of migration, some of those immigration policies carry very symbolic weight, I would say. One of the more eye-catching parts of Macron's immigration strategy was restricting birthright citizenship in Mayotte and tightening visa policies for Algerian elites. What kind of political message do you think is Macron sending with these policies?
So these two policies send a very clear political signal. As I said, Macron is trying to show he's willing to take a tougher stance on immigration, aligning himself more closely with conservative and far-right demands. In Mayotte, ending automatic birthright citizenship speaks directly to long-standing concerns from the right about the so-called migratory pressure in overseas territories. And the visa restrictions for Algerian dignitaries are not just about border controls. They tap into post-colonial tensions and broader frustrations over repatriation agreements. Macron is essentially saying France won't be taken advantage of anymore. So politically, he's repositioning himself to appeal to voters and parties on the right without formally aligning with them. But of course, this comes at a price. It undermines his centrist identity and pushes away the left, which still holds a significant number of seats in the assembly. So to make it short, the message is one of strength and control. But it's also a gamble, one that might help him pass certain laws, but at the cost of national cohesion and support from his original base.
Thank you very much for your answer. And now let's turn to the more economic impact of this political gridlock. You wrote that it was costing France around 100 million euros per day. That's a very huge amount of money. What were the real economic consequences of this delay, especially for ordinary French citizens?
Yes, the budget deadlock had a very tangible consequences beyond just the political drama, let's say, because France didn't have an approved stage budget until February 2025, which is the longest delay in decades. And the government had to operate under provisional funding rules. That meant it couldn't fully fund public services, invest in infrastructure, or launch new social programs. For ordinary citizens, this translated into delays in public sector wages, reduced capacity in hospitals, transportation congestion, and uncertainty around welfare benefits in general. Municipalities and local governments also had to postpone projects or scale back services because they weren't sure what funding they'd receive. And on a broader scale, the economic credibility of France took a hit, and therefore investors grew more cautious. So the deadlock wasn't just a technical issue, it affected day-to-day life and added to public frustration with government's inability to deliver basic governance.
You have already mentioned a bit the issue of the budget, and we know that Pierre Moscovici warned that without an approved budget, the deficit could hit 6% of GDP. How serious do you think is that in the context of EU fiscal rules and general France standing in the Eurozone?
Well, it's very serious. A 6% deficit is well above the EU's fiscal threshold, which sets a maximum deficit of 3% of GDP. While these rules were relaxed during the pandemic, for example, they're now being gradually reimposed, and France is expected to demonstrate more fiscal discipline. So when Pierre Moscovici sounded the alarm, it sent a clear message. France was risking its credibility both within the Eurozone and with international markets as well. A deficit that high can lead to increased borrowing costs, investor unease, and mounting pressure from Brussels to contain spending, all while Macron is already navigating domestic unrest and fragmented parliament. So the 6% warning wasn't just about numbers, in my opinion. It symbolized how political gridlock at home could spiral into broader economic and reputational crisis for France within the EU.
And it's not just about the numbers that affect the citizens, right? It's also about the general mood of people and different movements that follow up. So we're seeing rising unemployment and a return of street protests, especially among young people who are generally more prone to express their opinions in this sense.
Do you think Macron is losing touch with younger generations? And if so, what do you think are the risks of the disconnect?
I think it's clear that Macron is facing significant challenges with younger generations. Unemployment has been rising, especially among youth, and the protests have been heavily driven by younger people who feel increasingly alienated. Macron's focus on pushing through reforms that are seen as unpopular, particularly on pensions and immigration, has only intensified this disconnection. For many young people, these policies are perceived as out of touch with their economic reality, especially given the financial pressures they already face. I would say the risk here is twofold. Firstly, it weakens Macron's social mandate. If younger voters, who are crucial to any democratic system, feel ignored or sidelined, it's harder for him to maintain a broad base of support. And secondly, there's a long-term political risk. Younger voters might be more likely to embrace radical alternatives, either from the far left or the far right, if they feel their voices are not being heard. So Macron is already dealing with political fragmentation, and further alienating young people could lead to more instabilities in the years leading up to 2027, as these groups may turn to parties or movements that promise a more radical departure from his policies.
Politically speaking, especially if we look in the perspective, Macron seems to be playing more of a long game, especially with the left. You also point out in your article that Macron is trying to divide the left-wing New Popular Front by pulling the Socialist Party away from LFI. Do you think is it actually working, or is it just deepening the political rift?
So Macron's strategy is in many ways a double-edged sword. So on one hand, there has been some success in weakening the unity of the New Popular Front. For instance, the Socialist Party's refusal to support LFI's motion of no confidence against Macron's government in early 2025 highlighted the fracture within the left-wing coalition. Jean-Luc Mélenchon, leader of LFI, openly declared that the PS could no longer be considered an ally. However, while Macron has managed to deepen the divisions within the New Popular Front, it's debatable whether this strategy is truly effective in the long term. In fact, it might be backfiring. Encouraging this split, Macron is not only alienating the left-wing electorate, but also reinforcing the perception that he is orchestrating divisions for political gain. The more the left becomes fragmented, the more likely it is that Macron faces a deeply polarized political landscape, where any form of compromise becomes even more difficult.
You have already quickly mentioned the no confidence vote, which was taking place, and which was basically pivotal for this tension to come to the surface, signaling some serious tensions within the left. Do you think Macron can use this to his advantage moving forward? Or is it the left still a threat to his leadership?
So Macron's ability to leverage tensions within the left could certainly provide him with a short-term advantage, especially given the visible fracture between the PS and LFI that we just mentioned. The PS refusal to back LFI's no-confidence vote was a clear signal of this fracture. If Macron can continue to exploit these divisions and prevent the left from fully uniting, he may be able to weaken the opposition and stabilize his position in the National Assembly. However, this doesn't mean the left is no longer a threat, in my opinion, because while Macron might capitalize on this fragmentation, it's important to remember that the left still holds a significant influence within the National Assembly, particularly the New Popular Front with their 180 seats. The left-wing opposition, especially LFI, continues to represent a large portion of the electorate, and should they manage to consolidate, they could still pose a serious challenge to Macron's agenda. So while the division within the New Popular Front can provide him temporary political advantage, failing to address the concerns of the left-wing voters and parties could lead to political instability, as the left may regroup and intensify his opposition.
And so with all of this in mind, where do you think Macron go from here? I mean, with so many political missteps, protests and mounting economic stress, do you think there is a feasible chance that Macron's leadership can recover before the 2027 presidential elections?
This is a hard question to answer. So Macron's leadership faces significant challenges. His approval ratings have taken a hit. However, recovery is not entirely out of reach, but it will require navigating through a highly polarized landscape and balancing the competing demands of the right and the left. So I believe that Macron is facing a big paradox right now. While his domestic popularity is low, with many questioning his leadership and his disconnection from certain segments of the population, he still maintains a high level of credibility internationally. his leadership on key European issues such as the EU strategic autonomy and rearmament, climate policy, and relations with major powers has reinforced his position as a respected figure abroad. This duality could play a significant role in his future. If he can capitalize on global standing while working to regain domestic support, he might be able to present a more unified front, both at home and internationally. So recent developments in international affairs and these domestic reforms in the next couple of years will be crucial in determining whether he can stabilize his leadership and present a compelling vision for France ahead of the 2027 elections.
Yeah, but even beyond Macron as an individual leader, what are the bigger implications for this ongoing crisis in general for France's democracy? Are we heading towards more instability, or do you think there is a possibility of a path back to consensus politics?
So while it's hard to predict the future with certainty, of course, I believe we are at crossroads where the fragmentation of the National Assembly, the rise of extremist parties, and the inability to form strong governing coalitions signal a weakening of the traditional political order. France's democracy is facing a period of increasing polarization where compromise seems more needed than ever. And one of the most concerning aspects is the growing sense of frustration among citizens, as we said before. This growing feeling might lead to further weakening of democratic norms as people turn more radical or non-institutional channels to express their dissatisfaction. However, I believe it's not all bleak. There are still some possibilities for a return to consensus politics. Though this would require significant efforts from both political elites and the broader public. Basically, whether France's democracy faces more instability or finds a path back to consensus politics will depend on the ability of its leader to address the underlying structural issues, repair the fractured relationships within the political system, and re-engage especially with a disillusioned electorate. If Macron can find a way to manage the current crisis without further exacerbating divisions, there is still hope for France to emerge more united and politically stable in the long term.
Thank you very much for your answer. So before we wrap up, I'd like to ask you the last question, and I'd like us to zoom out towards the European level. France is obviously one of the EU's key leaders in political, economic, and diplomatic sense. What impact do you think this ongoing political instability can have on broader EU, especially at a time when now Europe is facing so many internal and external challenges?
Well, France's ongoing political instability certainly has the potential to impact the EU, especially at a time, as you said, when the EU is facing a multitude of challenges. As one of the EU's most influential members, politically, economically, and diplomatically, France plays a pivotal role in shaping EU policies and strategies, of course. So nonetheless, with Macron's leadership weakened by the domestic crisis, the country's ability to provide strong, consistent leadership within the EU is not being too much compromised. However, a politically unstable France may struggle to maintain its position as a leading diplomatic actor. France's role in the EU foreign policy, particularly regarding defense and security, could be diluted if the government remains preoccupied with domestic issues. Secondly, the economic repercussions of France's domestic crisis that we mentioned before could have repercussions as well within the EU. France is one of the EU's largest economies, and any further destabilization could have an impact on the Eurozone's overall economic stability. Also, the political deadlock could prevent France's capacity to push for crucial reforms at the European level, particularly in areas such as climate change and migration. So, to wrap up, while Macron's current political crisis may seem primarily as a domestic issue, there are still some implications for the EU. The ongoing instability undermines France's capacity to play its usual role as a stabilizing force within the Union, potentially making it more difficult for the EU to navigate its own complex challenges and unite in the coming years.
Alisa, thank you so much for such fulfilling and detailed answers. With this, we will end today's episode. And thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for hosting me and giving me this amazing opportunity to discuss my article.
To our listeners, please make sure to check out articles at riagroup.org and to follow us on social media to receive updates on new articles and contents. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you next time.